An Iran-made launcher successfully carries a 500-kilo biocapsule 130 kilometers into orbit. Human Rights Watch is under fire for ignoring eyewitness accounts and independent investigation in its report on a Gaza hospital attack. And Palestinian resistance fighters publish a video of an Israeli military camp in central Gaza, where dozens of Israeli forces were killed or wounded in a retaliatory operation. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran Space Agency has successfully launched its latest biocapsule on board a homegrown space launcher dubbed Salman. The project is in line with plans to revive different sectors of the country's space industry and utilize the know-how acquired in the biospace domain. The 500-kilogram biocapsule is a scientific, research, and technological device sent into an altitude of 130 kilometers above the Earth's surface. The project is in keeping with the roadmap to launch a manned mission into space and to develop and get the required technologies. Salman is the first of this class of domestically developed launchers and enjoys high-tech features.
The main objective of this launch is to acquire the necessary technology to send a manned mission into space and humans into space. And of course, this is a purely scientific endeavor. It was sponsored by the Ministry of Science and Technology of Iran. And the most important part about the entire project, Badia, is that it's fully homegrown, meaning that despite U.S. sanctions, Iranian scientists have been able to make such achievements, which is quite significant. I have to remind you that this ambitious space endeavor that Iran is pursuing is nothing new. Actually, 10 years ago, Iran had launched another mission into space, of course, including monkeys, and they safely returned to Earth. And of course, after this 10-year hiatus, so we see that Iran has resumed its space endeavors and these operations. And of course, the main objective is to send a manned mission into space, so which is definitely an important step for any country who wants to have a say and gain a foothold in today's international scientific fields. If Iran wants to have a say, if Iran wants to be considered as an important player when it comes to science and technology, it definitely has to pursue this path. And the most important part is that despite U.S. sanctions, despite all the hardships that scientists in Iran are facing, they have been able to make such achievement.
The head of the Iranian Space Agency says the biocapsule, which was successfully launched today using a homemade launcher, is part of a national program to send living things into space.
The successful launch of the first biocapsule is an important achievement of the space agency during the tenure of the 13th Iranian administration. It is a very important and strategic step in Iran's 10-year space program in the domain of biospace and space research. This step was successfully taken today. As space enthusiasts might know, Iran's space program contains well-defined plans in the field of space probes and biospace. One of the key features of this program is the development of biocapsules capable of carrying living things. The capsule, which was successfully launched today, weighed around 500 kilograms. The different parts and components of both the launcher and the capsule were successfully tested. Researchers will soon be provided with technical details of the test launch. In our later steps, we plan to launch heavier capsules capable of carrying bigger loads, more environmentally friendly, and enjoy better control and aerodynamic features. We have signed contracts in this field, and we will announce very good news in the coming years.
The court in the Iranian capital, Tehran, has issued a verdict against the U.S. for its role in the assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. The court has ordered the American government and 41 other persons and legal entities in the U.S. to pay a total of $49,770,000,000 in damages. The final ruling was issued following three court sessions. That also after Iranian citizens demanded justice to be served and for compensation to be paid for whatever material and spiritual damage caused by this U.S. crime. Meanwhile, the judge underlined that Washington's violation of Iranian sovereignty is proven, urging Americans to overtly confess to their crime. The verdict was issued in absentia and can be appealed within a two-month period. General Soleimani, along with the top Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was assassinated in a terror attack carried out by a U.S. drone in the Iraqi capital in January 2020. A Palestinian doctor has slammed the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch for issuing an unsubstantiated report on the massacre committed by Israel at the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza. Qassab Abu Sita says the U.S.-based group has blamed the attack on a Palestinian rocket without interviewing eyewitnesses. John Stepling, author and commentator, joined us earlier with his take on the Israeli attack on the Al-Ahli Hospital in Gaza.
Everybody knows that this was an Israeli missile, and people heard the sound that that missile made before it hit. So it was a supersonic type that Hamas is not in possession of. The explosion, the sort of forensic profile for this bomb suggests that it's a kind of missile that the U.S. supplies to Israel. It's not something that Hamas has. But beyond that, there are doctors, Mads Gilbert, the various Palestinian doctors who have worked at all of the hospitals in Gaza and have talked about the fact that there were no, ammunition stores in these hospitals in the basements. Israel has tried to make video tours discovering various automatic weapons and so forth. They're amateurish, frankly, and completely unconvincing. And yet they keep doing it. But the key point here is that this is part of the human rights industry. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. These are Western platformed organizations. They are funded by various Western sources. In the case of Human Rights Watch, George Soros for a very long time was the number one funder, but the Saudi royal family gives generously to Human Rights Watch. They are not impartial organizations. They are a branch of American imperialism. They are there to target who the U.S. government tells them to target.
As the Israeli bombardment of the Gaza Strip continues, Palestinian resistance fighters also keep up their retaliatory operations, dealing a severe blow to invading regime troops. Hamas has released a video showing that the Al-Qassam brigades, the movement's military wing, killed some 60 Israeli soldiers inside their tents in the Jur al-Adik area of central Gaza. Hamas fighters closed in on Israeli positions stealthily, planted bombs around their tents, and detonated the explosives simultaneously. Resistance forces then withdrew to their positions safely. Meanwhile, the Israeli military announced it has lost 9 of its troops in the fighting in northern and southern Gaza. Israel has confirmed the killing of 90 troops since it launched a ground operation in Gaza about 5 weeks ago. Fatalities among Israeli soldiers are believed to be much higher, as the regime does not disclose the exact figure. Israel has carried out airstrikes on a number of residential blocks in the Jabalia refugee camp in the northern Gaza Strip, killing at least 150 Palestinians. Israeli warplanes have also pounded Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, while the regime's ground forces have surrounded the city. There have been fierce clashes between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian resistance fighters. Palestinians say that the Israeli airstrikes now target areas the regime had earlier told people to seek shelter. The onslaught has killed over 16,200 Palestinians since it began 2 months ago. Around 70% of those killed are women and children. Let's move on to Mona Kandil. She is our correspondent in occupied Ramallah following the developments there, and she joins us now. Mona, what do you have for us?
The Israeli military continued its raids across the occupied West Bank as every day since the war started on the Gaza Strip, Israeli forces had been increasing their daily raids into cities, refugee camps, and towns. This morning, Israeli forces raided raided Balata refugee camp in Nablus. Clashes erupted between Palestinians and Israeli forces, and paramedics had said that at least four Palestinians had been wounded. One of them was in serious condition. After several hours, this Palestinian who was in serious condition, Abdel Nasser Riahi, 24 years old, succumbed to his injuries. In addition to Abdel Nasser Riahi, another Palestinian was shot and wounded over 1 week ago in Tul Karim, in one of the Israeli military raids to Tul Karim. Ahmed Ghanem also succumbed to his injuries. Earlier, the Israeli forces had already raided Tobas, and clashes erupted between Palestinians and the Israeli forces when the troops raided the refugee camp of Al-Far'a and the Tamun town. Both are in south Tobas, and killed two Palestinians, a teenager and a Palestinian minor, according to Ministry of Health. The number of Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli forces today had reached to 265 Palestinians were killed by the Israelis only since the 7th of October. In addition, to thousands had been wounded. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, the Israeli forces detained at least 60 Palestinians today. The majority of them were in Jenin. Every day, the Israeli forces arrest dozens of Palestinians, including women, children, elderly, and even journalists. So 60 Palestinians had been detained today. The majority were in Jenin. And according to the recent figures, the Israeli forces had detained 3,640 Palestinians since the 7th of October. And this means that the Palestinians who are being held in Israeli jails today is even over 7,800 Palestinians. At least 2,870 of those Palestinian prisoners are being held under the so-called administrative detention without charge or trial. The Israelis had been using this policy, administrative detention, as a kind of an excuse to keep Palestinians behind bars for lengthy time, because administrative detention means that neither the Palestinian prisoners and nor their lawyers are allowed to know what are the charges or why those people had been detained. The Israelis claim that there are secret information they cannot unveil, and this allows the Israeli military to keep Palestinians from the West Bank and from the from Al-Quds behind bars without charge or trial.
Thank you so much for that. Mona Kandilva from Occupied Ramallah, many thanks. Ghazi Hamad is a senior official of the Hamas resistance movement. He says in the course of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, a small number of resistance fighters dispelled the invincibility myth of the Israeli army forever.
In Al-Aqsa storm, we have been able to break the awe, which they always brag about when they say that it's an invincible army, an invincible state, and no Arab army can come close to it and do any harm to it. But thank God we were able to create a glorious history whereby we struck a very, very severe blow to this enemy and broke its awe and also its army and its security theory with a small number, not more than 1,000 fighters from the Qassam Brigades, who were able to destroy this theory forever. This has been shattered, this image, and will not be restored. And so, therefore, the liberation of Palestine is closer than we imagined. Those who always dreamt of returning to Haifa and Yaffa and Nakka and Nasra, we are closer than before. It's true that we paid a very high price, the blood of our people and our children and women. However, this has been the case ever since 1948. We'll have been paying the price. Hundreds of thousands of martyrs, hundreds of thousands of prisoners, hundreds of thousands of wounded, and millions of refugees and displaced throughout the world. We are paying and paying the price. However, we are also proud to be sacrificing for the sake of our cause and our ummah and our people. This cancer must be eradicated from the body of this nation, of this ummah.
Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon joined us earlier from Rafah with an update on the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip.
Killing Palestinians left and right since yesterday. They increased the attacks in the Jabalia refugee camp. They mainly try to kill as many Palestinian refugees or descendants of Palestinian refugees as possible, because the Israeli regime knows as long as there are refugees, the Israeli regime, this cancerous entity, will be in danger, because for Palestinians the right of return is sacred, and for the Israelis, when they hear someone talking about the right of return, is the worst thing they can hear about. I know a lot about the Israeli mentality, and these people, for them, the right of return is worse than taking control of Jerusalem Al-Quds itself. So it's for them to get rid of the Palestinian refugees, that's the best option, especially in Gaza. Out of 2.3 million Palestinians, there are around 1.6 million Palestinian refugees, and they want to kill them or get rid of them, because they're posing grave and present danger for the Israeli regime. Meanwhile, heavy fighting is taking place. The Israeli forces are suffering heavy losses. And when the Israelis say they lost 9 soldiers, multiply this by 10 or 20. They've been doing this for years. Every time they clash with Palestinian resistance fighters, they say, we lost 5 soldiers, but they actually lost 50 or 100. They've been doing this for many years, and especially during the wars, the first war in 2008, and then 2012, 2014, 2021, and now this war.
And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Pro-Palestinian activists in Britain have blockaded a factory that makes military drones for the Israeli army in Leicester, England. We take a look at some of the British press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. Pro-Palestinian protesters have gathered outside the office of the real estate consulting company Fisher German in London, demanding the closure of the company due to its ties with the Israeli weapons company Elbit Systems. Protesters gathered in the British capital on Wednesday, 29th of November, to mark the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, calling for an immediate end to arms supplies to Israel amid the regime's ongoing war in Gaza. The crowd denounced Fisher German Company for leasing properties to Elbit Systems and declared this Israeli company as the perpetrator of genocide against the people of Gaza Strip. They demanded to shut down the company. They held Palestinian flags and chanted pro-Palestinian slogans such as Free Palestine and From the River to the Sea, Palestine Will Be Free. Similar protests took place across the United Kingdom in places like Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool, as part of a coordinated national action. Fisher German is the landlord for Elbit Systems, Israel's largest private arms company that supplies the Israeli military with 85% of drones used against Palestinians. The British government has been criticized for being complicit in Israel's ongoing crimes in the Gaza Strip. Two of Israel's biggest weapons factories, Elbit and Rafael, both have operations in the United Kingdom. British pro-Palestinian activists have been targeting Elbit factories for more than 2 years. Britain, the United States, and the European Union member states have been providing the Israeli regime with weapons and military assistance since the regime launched its brutal genocidal campaign in Gaza on 7th of October. Since then, people across Britain and other parts of the world have held many protests and demonstrations showing their solidarity with the Palestinian people. People in the United Kingdom continue to protest against the Israeli regime's crimes in Gaza, demanding a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. The protest organizers say as long as the killing continues, they will continue to demonstrate. British newspaper The Morning Star has also covered this story and tells us more. Pro-Palestinian activists in the United Kingdom blockaded a factory that makes military drones for the Israeli army in Leicester, England, in solidarity with Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. Activists from Palestine Action organized a demonstration recently at UAV Tactical Systems in Meridian East Business Park, which is owned by Israeli arms manufacturer Elbit Systems. They blockaded the entrance to the site by chaining themselves to a van or lying in front of cars. Palestine Action said in a statement, UAV Tactical Systems is a joint venture of Elbit Systems, Israel's largest arms manufacturer, and the French arms company Thales. It added, today's action is a concrete form of solidarity with the Palestinians under attack, while Western governments insist on supporting the Israeli regime to the hilt despite growing public opposition. It also said that it will continue to confront British complicity in the genocide of Gaza until all links between Britain and Israel have been broken, making a reference to Israel's incessant war on hospitals in the besieged Gaza Strip. The statement added, Palestine Action last hit the US TACX site, making a reference to Israel's incessant war on hospitals in the besieged Gaza Strip. The statement added, Palestine Action last hit the UTACS site following the massacre of over 500 people in the Al-Ahli Arabi Baptist Hospital in Gaza. And recently, the world has once again witnessed the brutal attack and occupation of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza by the Israeli army. Elbit Systems is notoriously known as Israel's number one arms manufacturer. It makes killer drones, making up 85% of Israel's drone fleet. Palestine Action has been targeting Elbit Systems factory for more than 2 years. It has laid siege to the company in locations across Britain, leading to permanent closure of two sites, including the London headquarters of Elbit Systems and a factory in Greater Manchester in northwest England, and costing the company more than £400 million in lost contacts with the British Ministry of Defence. Yael Khan, an activist protesting at the site, said this company is a terrorist arms manufacturer for Israel. Its sole existence is to destroy Palestinian life, to massacre Palestinians, to murder them, and to exterminate them. That's what Israel is doing with the help of this company, Elbit Systems, producing death and destruction and making profits from Palestinian blood. And it is doing it from the very heart of the city of Leicester in England. The Middle East Eye has also covered the same story. Several university students in the United Kingdom have been targeted for taking part in pro-Palestine rallies as the British government continues to back the Israeli regime's atrocities in Gaza for allegedly violating health and safety protocols by taking part in two pro-Palestine rallies. Members of the group, some of whom belong to the School of Oriental and African Studies Palestine Society Committee, took part in two rallies, one on 29th of September during the Student Union Freshers' Fair and another outside the main entrance of the university on 9th of October, shortly after the Israeli regime forces began their strikes on Gaza. According to an internal report by the University of London, cited by Middle East Eye, the suspended students allegedly moved towards the entrance and attempted to occupy a staircase at one of the rallies. The report adds that a fire alarm went off shortly after the abortive attempt. The students have denied the allegations cited in the report, demanding that they be allowed to return to their classes. The Palestine Society said in a statement posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, "This is a targeted act of political repression against pro-Palestine students." In the meantime, British police are on standby as more than 40 pro-Palestine protests are expected to be held across the country in the coming days after an extended 7-day ceasefire expired on Friday, 1st of December.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
The compiler Sayyid Razi is a prominent alim of Arabic literature. That is the basis on which he compiled the sayings of Amir al-Mu'minin and the sermons. He also has another book known as Khasa'is al-A'immah, where he talks about the qualities of the imams. And remember, he's not that far away from early Ghaybat. You have Sheikh Saduq, Ghaybat al-Sughra, his student Mufid, and his student is Sayyid Razi and his brother Sayyid Murtaza. So they are not that far away from the days of the imam. And Sayyid Razi, based on his sources, gives the sanad, the chain of narration, going all the way to Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam. So you have some people in between Sayyid Razi and the seventh Imam as the Ruwat. And then the seventh Imam continues the chain that I heard from my forefathers going all the way until the early days. And he talks about the last days of Rasulullah. And this is important to know about it. And of course, this is from our source. That the Prophet, at a moment when the family members were there, but Ali was not there. And whenever he would gain consciousness, he would say, Aina Ali. Eventually, Ali came. And, you know, he sat down by Rasulullah. Bibi Fatima was there, other family members. And then, according to that narration from the Ahlul Bayt, the Prophet started talking about what will happen after I pass away. He says, remember, they will be busy in whatever they are planning. You will be busy with me as far as, you know, my funeral rites are concerned. But then he says something to Ali at that time. And this is very important. Many people say, why did Ali not take out this sword and go and fight for his Khilafat? The Prophet says, إِنَّمَا مَثَلُكَ فِي الْأُمَّةِ مِثَلُ الْكَعْبَةِ. Remember Ali, your example in the Ummah is the example of the Kaaba. إِنَّمَا تُؤْتَى وَلَا تَأْتِي. The Kaaba doesn't go to people. People come to the Kaaba. And so he's saying that after, you know, I already talked to them, I mentioned about your rights, collectively as well as individually, and all of them said, yes, we believe. But Allah knows the truth. Then he says, you know, when I pass away, you don't need to go then and ask for the Khilafat and your right. It is their duty to come to you. And so already, you know, he says, فَأَلْزِمْ بَيْتَكْ وَاجْمَعِ الْقُرْآنَ لَا تَعْلِيفِهِ. Stay at home. Compile the Quran according to the way it was revealed. And وَعَلَيْكَ, this is the last statement there. He says, وَعَلَيْكَ بِالصَّبْرُ عَلَى مَا يُنزِلُ بِكَ وَبِهَا. And O Ali, I urge you to maintain patience. Sabr on what will happen to you and her until you join me on the day of Qiyamah by the Hawza Kawthar. And so this is where something we have to realize, that the advice of Amir al-Mu'mineen, of Rasulullah to Amir al-Mu'mineen was to maintain sabr and patience. And this is where many people say, oh, why didn't Ali go himself behind the door? Why did he allow his wife to go? There is another narration connected to this, and this is from Kitab al-Sulaym. I'm using that narration here just to complete this story. That Rasulullah told Ali, you will maintain sabr. If you really want to understand the greatness of Ali, it's not in Badr and Uhud and Khandaq and Khaybar. If you really want to understand the greatness of Amir al-Mu'mineen, it is in this incident after wafat of Rasulullah. When they broke the door, came in, you know, many people ask this question, and I avoided it last night, but I was asked, if you want to know, did Ali show any reaction? Yes, initially he stood up. He stood up and got a hold of the leader of the group who had come. Basically, hold his collar, pull him up, and threw him down on the ground. Ali got on him, started hitting him on his face and on his neck with the intention of killing him. فَذَكَرَ قَوْلَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. This is his riwayat. He remembered what Rasulullah had said. You know, you can see what happened to Fatima. This is Ali, most courageous of the Arabs. Yet he immediately remembers what Rasulullah said. And at that time he says to the leader of the group there, وَالَّذِي كَرَّمَ مُحَمَّدًا بِالنُّبُوَّةِ, by the name of the one who has honored Muhammad with nubuwwah, يَبْنَ السُّحَاقِ لَوْ كَانَ لَا كِتَابَ مِنَ اللَّهِ سَبَقْ, if it was not because of the عهد رسول الله, the advice that he had given to me, you would have seen that you would not be able to enter my home. And so when we talk about Amir al-Mu'mineen, then why didn't he react? This is where his hands were tied. For the greater interest of the ummah and survival of the faith. You know, we normally talk about the masaib of Fatima al-Zahra, and indeed, she is Ummul Masaib in that way. Amir al-Mu'mineen is Mazloom. But in this incident, sometimes we forget the children who are in the house. There is no narration. I don't know where Hassan and Hussein, where were they looking? I don't know Zainab and Umm Kulsoom, where they were looking at the mother on one side or the father on the other hand.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Alim Hali Hakim Mati Ghafur Shakur Wadud Qay. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Take pieces of bread from me and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has noted that Western countries, which previously insisted that Ukraine should defeat Russia on the battlefield, are now gradually changing their position. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. Western officials are engaged in behind-the-scenes talks with Kiev about potential peace negotiations with Russia, trying to find out what concessions Ukraine might have agreed to in order to end the conflict. Several U.S. officials familiar with the matter reportedly described the discussions, which took place during a recent meeting of more than 50 nations back in Kiev, as delicate. According to the report, the talks were driven by growing fears among Western officials that the conflict between Kiev and Moscow has reached a stalemate. Western countries are also said to be concerned that Ukraine is running out of forces and about their own ability to continue providing aid to Kiev. Two NBC News sources said the U.S. President Joe Biden has been particularly focused on Ukraine's manpower issues, with one official stating that while the West can provide Kiev with weapons, if they don't have competent forces to use them, it doesn't do a lot of good. Another major concern is the conflict between Hamas and the Zionist regime of Israel, which has drawn attention away from the war between Russia and Ukraine, potentially making new aid packages more difficult. When it comes to the situation on the battlefield, some U.S. officials reportedly described it as a war of inches, suggesting that the outcome of the conflict will hinge on how long each side can maintain a capable standing army. NBC News' sources also privately warned that Ukraine may only have several months before more urgent discussions about peace negotiations should begin. Meanwhile, some Western officials reportedly suggested that as an incentive to consider talks with Russia, NATO could offer Ukraine some security guarantees short of formal accession to the organization. Publicly, President Biden has said that Washington would not engage in any talks on the Ukraine conflict unless Kiev wants to. However, while Moscow has never closed the door to negotiations with Kiev, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky signed a decree last year banning all agreements with Russia after four former Ukrainian regions overwhelmingly voted to join the country. Reported fears about Ukraine's dwindling military potential come amid Kiev's counteroffensive, which started in early June but has failed to gain any substantial ground. Russia Today, the RT network, has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Vladimir Putin noted on Friday, 3rd of November, that Western countries, which previously insisted that Ukraine should defeat Russia on the battlefield, are now gradually changing their position. The Russian president told members of the Civic Chamber, a civil society body tasked with consulting the government on policymaking, he said, "They're changing their tune now, saying different things." President Putin argued that the nation should become stronger in all aspects, including the economy, military, and political stability. Such strength deters hostile actors from trying to isolate Russia. He noted, "The European Union nations excluded our energy. So what? What is the result? Our gross domestic product, or GDP, will grow up to 3% this year, and the leading European economies are shrinking." President Putin added, "They suffer, they have real problems," noting that he was saying this without joy. President Putin added, "This doesn't mean that we should behave aggressively. It means we must be sovereign in every sense of the word." The United States and its allies have accused Russia of launching an unprovoked attack on Ukraine last year and have pledged to support Kiev for as long as it takes to defeat Moscow. Washington has stated its goal in Ukraine is to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. Moscow says its operations in Ukraine were caused by Western refusal to address Russia's concerns about NATO expansion and Kiev's discriminatory policies against Russian speakers after the 2014 armed coup d'etat. The U.S. stopped the Ukrainian government from striking a truce in the first weeks of the ongoing conflict, which would have made it a neutral nation. Kiev has declared that the only outcome it would accept is to push Russia out of all of the territories that it claims as its own, including Crimea. It has failed to secure any significant gains on the front line during the so-called summer counteroffensive this year. Sputnik News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said Kiev's attempts to advance on the front line remain fruitless and are resulting in high battlefield losses and decreasing morale among Ukrainian troops. The Russian Defense Minister said during a governmental meeting recently, despite the supply of new kinds of NATO weapons, the regime in Kiev is losing the war. The Russian forces keep conducting active defense, effectively inflicting damage. Sergei Shoigu specifically highlighted the successes of Russian air defense troops, praising them for delivering 1,400 successful intercepts of Ukrainian assets last month. He said the downed targets included 37 planes and 6 attack MS tactical battlefield missiles. The U.S. provided the latter capability earlier in October after months of requests by the Ukrainian government. The Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu compared the number of downed Ukrainian planes with the number of F-16s that had been promised to Ukraine by Western donors. He noted the pledged fleet of aircraft would require Russia roughly 20 days to destroy at the rate demonstrated recently. Western governments have vowed to support Ukraine for as long as it takes to defeat Russia on the battlefield, but their ability to deliver on their promise remains in question. The conflict in West Asia, which erupted recently and caused a surge in demand for weapons by the Israeli regime, has further weakened Kiev's ability to secure Western aid and assistance. Ukraine aid has become a point of contention in the opposition-majority U.S. House of Representatives. Newly appointed GOP Speaker Mike Johnson recently rejected a White House proposal to bundle together spending on several security goals, including Ukraine. A bill he put to the floor in the House recently proposes a separate $14.3 billion package for the Israeli regime. However, U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to veto that bill. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. According to a new opinion poll, American support for Ukraine amid its war with Russia has significantly fallen. Survey results released recently by Gallup show 41% of the American public believe the U.S. government is doing too much to help Ukraine. This marks a 12% increase since the survey was last conducted in June. A third of respondents said they believe the United States was doing the right amount, down from 43% in June, and roughly a quarter of those polled said they thought the U.S. wasn't doing enough. When broken down by political party, Republicans and independents were less likely to support continued assistance for Ukraine. According to the Gallup opinion poll, roughly 62% of Republicans and 44% of independents say the U.S. is doing too much for Ukraine. More Americans are also likely to support the U.S. helping to end the war quickly than when the survey was first administered in August of 2022. 54% of respondents maintain the U.S. should help Ukraine reclaim its former territory, down from 66%. and 43% said the United States should try to help end the war, even if it means ceding territory to Russia. Asked how long the U.S. should provide funding to Ukraine, more than 60% of those who took part in the survey said it should have limits. 37% of Americans, mostly Democrats, said they believe the United States should continue to provide aid as long as Ukraine requests it. The survey responses mirror the sentiments found in other surveys. According to a recent Reuters news agency Ipsos opinion poll, Americans are also less likely to say the U.S. should provide weaponry to Ukraine than they were over the summer months. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
All governments are responsible with regards to Palestine. By Ayatollah Khamenei, February 27, 2010. The West did not show any support for the people of Gaza against such a great disaster, which was taking place in front of everyone's eyes. And the West has continued to adopt the same positions until today. The United Nations disgraced itself. America was disgraced, and it even became even more disgraced. They did not show any support even after the Goldstone report was released and everyone became aware of it. Today, the savage and criminal leaders of the Zionist regime should be put to trial and punished, but nothing is being done in this regard. No measure is being adopted. On the contrary, support for the usurping and fake Zionist regime is increasing even more than this. These things have brought shame on the West. I would tell you that today, the Western civilization has been challenged on the issue of Palestine. Today, the claim of Western liberal democracy has been questioned. This means that you and Palestine have brought down and dismissed this Western claim, which has survived for several centuries and with which the West used to rule over the entire world. Resistance, the one that you are showing, has such significance and greatness.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The only solution to the issue of Palestine is resistance and fighting. February 27th, 2010. The only way to solve the issue of Palestine is resistance and fighting. This is correct, but this resistance and fighting is dependent on preserving the people's morale and hope and their presence on the scene. In my opinion, this is the greatest task that Palestinian groups, organizations, and activists should carry out. The purpose of the pressures that are exerted on Gaza by both sides, whether by Zionists or by Westerners, is to make the people turn away from resistance. The purpose of the pressures which are exerted on the West Bank, on the issue of the Jewish settlements, on the issue of Quds, which was referred to by one of the friends in this meeting, on the issue of shocking and drastic measures, on the issue of the Israeli West Bank barrier and other such issues, is to make the people turn away from resistance and to submit. We should not allow this to happen. You should not allow this to happen. You should keep the people of Palestine and Gaza, these resistant and strong people, hopeful so that they know their great movement will produce results.
I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.